Blog Talk Radio.
Hello. Happy Saturday, everyone. My name is Heather McRae, and this is CPR Radio, Compassionate Process Radio. I am inviting you to come back to life. I am a master's level special educator in private practice as a coach and chicken and Reiki healer for anyone of any age who is ready to live authentically and celebrate your uniqueness. My background in special education has taught me so much about life process. I'm also educated in many areas, including Chinese medicine, analytical psychology, comparative religion, Native American spirituality, addiction and family systems, systematic training for effective parenting, fairy tale myths. I'm an ordained minister through the Madonna Ministries. And I am here to help you shift your thinking and your life into something much more in alignment with your higher purpose. I am a neophyte Wiccan priestess, a Kabbalist, and a Know Thyself initiate in the Modern Mystery School. I am clairaudience, and I take my many years of Al-Anon recovery very seriously. My goal is to empower everyone to be the goddess or the god that they are by taking full responsibility for healing wounds, letting go of the past, and embracing all of your gifts and talents. I encourage everyone of every age to live out loud, be honest, and live your life authentically. Be who you are. I would like to start off our show. I'm going to read to you an affirmation for today. And this is from my website, which is Heather McRae. My name is spelled H-E-A-T-H-E-R. Last name is mccrae.wordpress.com. I've had a lot of great responses from this one. I'd like to share it with you. Giving up and surrendering are not the same thing. As I have learned and shared many times, all emotions and feelings are really based on either one of two things, love or fear. When we each have moments of being entrenched in ego, we give up. We turn our back on light and love and hope and sit stuck. God knows I've done it. An example would be taking something that someone has said to you and about you and crumbling into a deep, dark depression about it. We have all been there. The other option would be to take a deep breath, really hear what's being said, and then deciding on the most loving response. This is so important, especially in a work environment when you go through a review with a superior in your office. It's really, really important to be able to sit in detachment and listen to what they're telling you rather than taking it personally. When we surrender to love and our higher purpose, we choose to be in flow, resisting nothing and allowing things to unfold regardless of what we feel. One of the key things I've learned in Al-Anon is that feelings are not facts. I struggle with this one too, but when I remind myself and I'm able to step back, it is much easier for me to surrender and remember who and what I am. Choose love over fear today. Don't ever give up, but remember to surrender to the higher will. That is today's affirmation. Our guest today scheduled is Dr. Thomas Armstrong, who is an expert in neurodiversity. And we're told that Dr. Armstrong is in commute somewhere and we're having a hard time getting a hold of him. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about his work. His website is thomasarmstrong.com. And neurodiversity is a topic that's near and dear to my heart. My friend Amy Hart actually told me about this several weeks ago. And as a special educator in the classroom, I worked with at-risk children for 7.5 years, both in the preschool and the middle school level. And I was so struck by the depth of the brilliance, and for some of these children, even if they weren't intellectually just way on fire, a lot of them were just so intuitive and so emotionally right on in ways that other children are not. And I was always frustrated that the whole realm of special education has such a negative connotation for so many people when the children that I worked with were so amazing. so many of the children that I work with and the families that I work with and the people that I've met, including me, I'm an adult with ADHD and depression, and I've worked with so many kids who dwell in the autism spectrum who are nothing separate from wonderful. But the thing is that we are different. And Dr. Armstrong has 8 principles of neurodiversity, and I've shared these before, but I think they're worth repeating. The first one is the human brain works more like an ecosystem than a machine. The second, human brains exist along continuums of competence. Number 3, human competence is defined by the values of the culture to which you belong. Categories of disability often deeply reflect the values of a culture. Number 4, whether you are regarded as disabled or gifted depends largely on when and where you were born. In other times and other places, there have been different disability ability diagnoses depending upon cultural values. And boy, isn't that true. Number 5, success in life is based on adapting one's brain to the needs of the surrounding environment. Despite principles 3 and 4, however, it's true that we don't live in other places or times. Consequently, the immediate need is to adapt to our current contemporary culture. Number 6, success in life also depends on modifying your surrounding environment to fit the needs of your unique brain, which he says is niche construction. We shouldn't focus all of our attention on making a neurodiverse person adapt to the environment in which they find themselves, which is a little like making a round pig fit a square hole. We should also devise ways of helping an individual change their surrounding environment to fit the needs of their unique brain. Number 7, niche construction includes career and lifestyle choices, assistive technologies, human resources, and other life-enhancing strategies tailored to the specific needs of a neurodiverse individual. There are many tools, resources, and strategies for altering the environment so that it meshes with the needs of a neurodiverse brain. Number 8, positive niche construction directly modifies the brain, which in turn enhances its ability to adapt to the environment. In other words, we all have to come together on this. As educators, also, you know, as parents, when you're dealing with a child who isn't like you, it is so important to learn how to listen to who they really are. I go through this all the time. There are so many kids out there who are completely misunderstood by their parents because the way they express themselves is not the way that parents are used to hearing. Because, you know, I mean, you see a child reflecting back to you. You expect certain things of your children, that they're going to look like you, that they're going to sound like you, that they're going to think like you. But the truth is, more and more, kids don't. And unless you are willing to really listen to your kids and open up to what they have to say to you, they're never going to be able to be who they really are. And the truth is, as parents, as adults, our job is to mentor children into being their fullest, truest selves. I want to share with you really quick, if you'd like to join in a conversation, I'd love to talk with you. Our toll-free number is 1-877-296-0345. And if you're in Canada, it's area code 917-889-3818. My producer, Michelle Arbeau. Michelle, are you there today? We have
yes,
talked many times.
Yes, I am. But,
hey, let's talk a little bit. Do you mind? Let's talk a little bit about kids, because I know a lot of parents who have children who are neurodiverse really struggle with how different their kids are from them. Have you had any experiences with that?
Well, you really opened a can of worms there, didn't you? Yes, absolutely. I mean, you know, my daughter, for example, way back, you know, a few years ago, her pediatrician wanted to label her as a high-functioning autistic. And, you know, at the time I thought, okay, finally I have an answer as to why she's so incredibly difficult and why she's so so very drastically different from the rest of the family. But, you know, at the time I think that, you know, I was a lot more rigid, and I'm a very practical person. I mean, I really view things from a very practical perspective. And my daughter, for example, you know, she sees things so much more magically and beautifully and just through a completely different lens. It's almost like she's looking through a kaleidoscope sometimes. You know, it's just, she sees, you know, white and I see black. You know, it's very different. So I think that was the greatest challenge between the two of us, was understanding how the other person processed things. So there's been a lot of growth since then, and I've come to accept her. I don't completely understand her, but I accept her for her differences from me, and that's just the way the world is. I mean, there's so many different children like her right now that have parents like me that really feel like they need to put them into a mold and say, no, look, you have to be more like me. You have to fit in the family, and you have to, you know, go by these old rules and these old ways, and it's just simply not the case. They just can't, and I think that's the biggest learning curve.
You brought up a beautiful point, and I really would encourage any parent or even any adult, an educator, special educator, what you said was that you don't always understand her, but you accept her, and that, to me, is key. I mean, children are so different. I mean, I know I'm older than you, but I'm 48 this year, and when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s and stuff, I mean, special education was in its infancy anyway, but I was undiagnosed with ADHD until I was 40. So even having, having ADHD and stuff, when I was first teaching special ed and I was teaching middle school, I think, had it made because I wasn't initially trained as a special educator. My background was in theater. My background was in theater and music, and I got my bachelor's degree in visual arts, which was film and video. So I came from way outside the box anyway, and that was actually one of the things that made me so effective in my job, because I didn't have expectations except that I knew the children were smarter than the way that they were being treated. And I think the point that you made for parents to hear, which is so great, is that you don't necessarily have to understand your child. You just have to let them know that you're listening. Do you, Michelle, can you give a specific example of maybe something that you say to your daughter when you guys are having a difficulty that lets her know that you're hanging in there with her?
Well, you know, she has a hard time with school because she is different. I mean, there are a lot of kids who are quote-unquote normal, whatever that is, but, you know, there's a lot of kids who just don't get her, and lately, you know, her friends have kind of, it's hit or miss. Some days she'll come home and be a mess because no one wanted to play with her, and then the next day they're back on again, right? So
yeah.
I, you know, she's
what grade
issues.
Is she in, Michelle?
She's in grade 4, and
You
know, she's having some issues with just feeling different and knowing that she's different, and I think she's coming to the realization that she is different. And so lately I've been telling her, you know, and I mean, back when she was younger, of course, I tried to fit her in the mold and tried to make her normal, like those, you know, normal kids or whatever they're called.
Sure,
and
every parent goes through
lately,
that, sure.
Exactly, and lately I've been just saying, you know what, you're different, and that's just the way it's supposed to be. You know, I really stress that this is who she is, and this is, you know, that's the beauty in it, that, you know, she's unique and she has unique things to share with the world, and I always point out to her some of the great qualities that she has that no one else has, you know, that the artistic ability that she has, or, you know, the way she's able to visualize things. And, you know, I'm sure lots of people have it, but she has her own unique spin on it, and I always point those out to her because I think she's really struggling with recognizing that she is different. And I guess they're more like forerunners of the newest generation coming in, right?
I think that's right, and I think that what you said is really wonderful because, you know, one issue, as you know, there was that horrible school shooting this week, and I did a blog about it just because it's so upsetting to me that this has been going on for years now, and it's actually the 60th school shooting internationally. And I think that the root of that and the root of all bullying is based on complete misunderstanding. And the thing is that until children, see, the thing is that when there's a tragedy like that, what you're dealing with is a child who has been sitting on rage and frustration and all this stuff for ages and either doesn't have the ability or the tools or the skills to communicate that or doesn't feel safe communicating it. And I really believe that the work that you're doing with your daughter by letting her know, you know, and especially what you said about pointing out her gifts, you know, what she is good at, so that when she has those days where she feels completely overwhelmed by what she's feeling, you can help bring her back down to reality, help her stay grounded and just be like, it was a day, you know? I mean, and help her not take it so hard and learn to accept who she is. And that way, and also, Michelle, because she's in fourth grade and, you know, in a couple of years we'll be going into middle school and stuff, you're creating a channel of communication with her that is going to keep you in good stead when things start getting really rocky. I don't know any child who doesn't suffer in middle school. I mean, do you know anybody who doesn't? I mean, you know, it's such a... It's hell for everybody. You know, it's hell for the children, it's hell for the parents because they worry, and kids go through hormone changes, and they go through life changes, and they start changing the way they communicate, and, you know, they start having attitude if they didn't have it already. And then if you, on top of that, if you're dealing with a child who is neurodiverse, who's somebody who's different from you, it's so easy as a parent, as an adult, to take that personally rather than stepping back and taking a deep breath and really listening to what the kid is saying, even if the way that they're saying it is really obnoxious. You know, because, I mean, let's face it, if you're dealing with middle school kids, there's going to be some obnoxious in there. There just is. You know, I mean, when I was teaching middle school kids, some of the most obnoxious kids I actually got the best work from because I didn't try to change the way they talked to me. I just, you know, I connected with them in a way that let them know that they were respected, and then I talked to them about their language. But until a kid knows that they're safe with you, you're not going to get anything done. But I really respect the way that you talk to your daughter, and I would encourage you to keep doing the same because, like I said, you know, especially with girls, holy cow, you know, depending on the cliques in the classroom and on the playground and, you know, even in fourth grade, it's all there. Does your daughter ever worry about that kind of stuff? Does she talk about groups of friends that don't include her?
Well, that's precisely what's been happening is that some of the friends have been, you know, excluding her or, you know, how they get. It's kind of one day they want to have this little circle with this number of friends and then it switches up and, you know, the whole drama of elementary school, right? But lately, you know, there's been some issues with weight and I'm thinking, weight at 9 years old? You know, she comes home saying, you know, my tummy's too big or, you know, she's crying about this. You know, she's got tears in her eyes and she's saying, you know, I want to wear my rubber boots to school, not my winter boots because it makes my legs look fat. And I'm thinking, where is this coming from? And this isn't something that a girl that age should have to worry about. So we've been working on that, too, and really, you know, letting her know that this, you know, she's got a very jaded view of her body image, and I don't know where it's coming from, but we're really working with her to shift that.
Yeah, good for you. Holy cow. Is it the other kids in her class that are saying these things?
Well, you know, she's kind of voluptuous, and I don't mean that in a, you know, she's not overweight.
No,
body.
She's definitely a little goddess. I mean, yeah.
Well, what it is I think she's matured a little bit more for her age, so she's got, you know, the hips and the butt. You know, she's kind of, you know, she's got some curves. I mean, for nine, she's got some, and yeah, I mean, she's definitely within the weight range, absolutely. So there's nothing to worry about in terms of being overweight. But I think looking at the other kids who have beanpole legs and, you know, the classic kid like I was, you know, in elementary that looked like I had toothpicks for legs. So she's looking at these children and thinking, you know, I'm not like them. I'm different, and that's, you know, that's where the issue is coming from. But yeah,
so
we're definitely working on that one.
So she's in the place of owning her inner goddess a little early, huh?
Yeah, I think so. And I'm thinking, you know, the monthly visitor. This is a little graphic for the show, but I'm thinking it's coming early for this little one, and I'm just bracing myself.
Well, it happens. I mean, I was 11 when I got my period, and a lot of little girls do start around 9 years old. It just depends. You know, we're all different. And, you know, going back to the discussion of neurodiversity, initially neurodiversity was meant as a conversation specific to the autism spectrum to try to get people to stop labeling everything as a pathology. And, excuse me, Dr. Armstrong's website, he really talks about how, you know, everybody's gone a little nuts in our culture about making everything a pathology. There's something wrong, you know. And I think neurodiversity really needs to embrace everything. I mean, you know, it can come down to the conversation we're having today about your daughter's image of her body, you know. I mean, she's diverse. She's different from the other kids her age based on the little group she's in right now. That doesn't make, I mean, you know this and I know this, but it doesn't make her wrong or bad. It just means that she's expressing her individuality. Her body's expressing its individuality, and it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And, you know, one of the things that our friend Amy Hart brought up that we talked about a couple of months back is so important too, is including adults and children who have psychic abilities, who are clairaudient, clairvoyant, clairsentient, children who are different. I don't know if you ever watched the Rosie O'Donnell show. I have been watching it online when I can grab an episode here and there. But she had a young man on her show who is, I think he's only 11, and he has been in love with fashion design since he was like 3. And
it was
amazing. I mean, his mom showed up in the audience, and they had RuPaul, who's a drag queen, on there, and she was talking to Rosie about her son being teased and bullied because he was not, you know, didn't fit into the mold of a regular little boy. He's very, he's the coolest kid. His name is Ben something, but I mean, he actually, about a month after, he actually made a dress for Rosie O'Donnell, and she wore it on her show, and it was gorgeous. And he got to meet RuPaul, and since being on her show and her really talking to the public about the issue of bullying and children being different, whether they know they're gay or not, you know, having, you know, I guess, quote-unquote, gay-looking tendencies or whatever, and really confronting that and asking children to be kinder to other children and really just accept everybody as who they are. This little boy now is like one of the heroes in the school. And everybody
wow.
loves him because he's a fashion designer in the making, and it's so great that his mom is so supportive of who he is. And I think that's such an important part of the conversation, too, about neurodiversity. I mean, getting back to the idea of bullying, I mean, one of the first things I learned as a special educator is that every child is different. And it's true about every person. It doesn't matter if we're 300 years old. We're all different. We all think differently. We all feel differently. We all have our own unique authentic process. And the best way, which is what you're doing with your daughter, the best way for a parent to help a child is to accept them as they are. You know, a lot of times when I coach parents with kids who are neurodiverse, the first thing I have to tell them is the one that has to change is the parent. Because when you change the words you're using, when you change your body language, when you change your attitude, your child will have a response to that. Because the thing is, one of the things I put on my blog a couple of days ago is that kids go through stages. When they're little, when they're like up to about 7 years old, little ones are tape recorders. They repeat everything you say, just exactly the way you say it. And you can assess this, you have kids. And, you know, and it's a great way for you to know whether you're in line or not, because guess what? 10 seconds later, you're going to have a little kid go, Mommy, what does blah, blah mean? And if you cuss in front of them, boy, you know, you're going to know it. But then things kind of shift. And when you have kids from 7 to, like, 13, they are kind of more processing and really taking in what you're saying. And you have to be really careful, because by the time they hit their teens, they are mirroring back to you everything that you didn't want to see in your darkness when you were going through your adolescence. They get strange and wonderful and weird. And, kids in general are reactors. They're going to react to what you're saying. You know, if you have a kid who's like 7 to 14, they're just going to react to what you say. And if what you're saying is positive and kind and grounded, then they're going to light up like little Christmas trees. But what if you're saying is diminishing and cruel and all that other stuff, which is what I grew up with, all it's going to do is collapse them into a puddle of water. You know, it's like throwing a huge water hose on their light. And then, you know, like I said, older children become mirrors. Whatever unresolved, awkward adolescent darkness you didn't face, they will present it to you in some form or fashion in your face. And the thing is, you know all this, because you're a parent who's made the commitments. You knew when you had your child that was your job, that was your responsibility, and that you're there to see it through no matter what. And so you're there for her. And you know what? It's been my experience, having both been a teacher and a nanny and other work I've done with children and families, it's all about the quality of the time that you spend with them. It's not the amount, it's the quality. It's if when you come through the door after being gone, however long you've been gone, if you're just fully present for them, even if you're exhausted, they don't care. They just want to know you're there. You know, even if all you do is curl up at the ball with them and watch TV, at least it's your arm around them and they know you're there and that you're really paying attention. And that, to me, is what matters the most, you know. And, you know, again, it's all just about acceptance. And a lot of times, you know, when we meet anybody who's different from us, the thing that comes up right away is ego and fear. And if we can just stay out of our egos long enough to just accept who we are and let that be reflected outwardly, then nobody and no thing can mess with our sense of peace. You know what I mean? It doesn't matter how different you are from me. I mean, one of the things that I love about our friendship, Michelle, is that we are different. And it's neat because when we brainstorm together, we get to come up with neat stuff because we're each thinking from a different place. And one of the things I've loved about my work in special education was I learned so much from kids. I mean, if you're a parent or an educator and you're really, really open to the children you teach, you will learn so much from them. And the really effective educators, whether they're in the realm of special education or not, are the ones that really know how to listen. And I think anytime you're dealing with children, 90%, if not 90%, 95% of being effective is just listening. Just listening, just really listening, and not listening with judgment, but listening with an open mind and an open heart. And I'm going to wrap things up today. I'm sad that Dr. Armstrong couldn't join us because of his travel schedule, but I'm grateful, Michelle, that you were willing to open up about your experiences with your daughter. And I really encourage you, please email me. You can reach me, heather@processdifferently.com. My phone number, you can reach me anytime, is 905-216-2021. And there's my cat, Shay Shay. And you can reach me on my website, which is Heather McCrae, H-E-A-T-H-E-R-M-C-C-R-A-E, heathermcrae.wordpress.com. Drop me a line. Email me, call me. I'm here to support you in your authentic process. Thanks so much for joining me today. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye.